ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 21, Instructions by Maharaj Prithu, text number 15. Ramsu Pinyata Bhujo
Ramsu Pinyata Bhujo
Gora Kanja Kanja Runikshanaha
Gora Kanja Runikshanaha
Sunasa Sumakha Somya
Sunasa Sumakha Somya
Hamsa Sudvijhasmita
Hamsa
Ramsupinyatha
bhujo
Gora kanjaru nekshana Sunasa sumukha somya Vinamsa sudvijhasmita Ramsu Pinyatha
Bhujo
Gora Kanjaru Nekshana Sunasa Sumukha Somya Vinamsa Sudvijhasmita
Ramsu Pinyatha Bhujo
Ramsu Pinyatha Bhujo
Ramsu,
Ramsu,
very tall,
very tall.
Pinayata,
Pinayata,
full and broad,
full and broad.
Bhujha,
Bhujha,
arms,
arms.
Gora,
Gora,
fair complexion,
fair complexion.
Kanja,
Kanja,
lotus like,
lotus like.
Aruna Ikshana,
Aruna Ikshana,
with bright eyes resembling a morning sunrise.
With bright eyes
and
a morning sunrise.
Sunasa.
Sunasa.
Straight nose.
Straight nose.
Sumukha.
Sumukha.
With a beautiful face.
With a beautiful face.
Somya.
Somya.
Of a grave bodily stature.
Of a grave bodily stature.
Pinna Amsa.
Pinna Amsa.
Shoulders raised.
Shoulders raised.
Su.
Su.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
Dvija.
Dvija.
Teeth.
Teeth.
Smita.
Smita.
Smiling.
Smiling.
Translation. King Prithu's body was tall and sturdy, and his complexion was fair. His arms were full and broad, and his eyes as bright as the rising sun. His nose was straight, his face very beautiful, and his personality grave. His teeth were set beautifully in his smiling face. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Amongst the four social orders, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras, the Kshatriyas, both men and women, are generally very beautiful, as will be apparent from the following verses. It is to be concluded that not only were Maharaj Prithu's bodily features attractive, as described here, but he had specific, all auspicious signs in his bodily construction. As it is said, the face is the index of the mind. One's mental constitution is exhibited by his facial features. The bodily features of a particular person are exhibited in accordance with his past deeds. For according to one's past deeds, his next bodily features, whether in human society, animal society, or demigod society, are determined. This is proof of the transmigration of the soul through different types of bodies. So, here's the description of Maharaj Prithu. So, as we've described, Maharaj Prithu was a Saktavesh avatar, meaning that he is a personality who's empowered by God, empowered by Krishna, to do something which practically only the Supreme Personality of Godhead can do, ordinary living beings cannot do. So, he's a at the same time, he is performing the activities of a king or the kshatriyas. So within the natural divisions of human society, there are always the intelligent class, or like the, say if we take the social body as like our body, so the head is guides the body, it's the brains, and so the intellectual division of society, the teachers and those who understand the spiritual science, they are the Brahmins, and those who then administrate and rule and keep law and order under the direction of the Brahmins, as advised by the Brahmins, they are the Kshatriyas. Prithu Maharaj, although he was a transcendental personality, so he was, he didn't have any material duties to perform in this world, but as a representative of God, he was showing us how to be the proper king. So he was a kshatriya in that sense. He was showing us how to be, if someone is going to rule over people, whether on a small scale or a large scale, there is a proper way to do that. One should be a pious person. One should not be a rogue. You don't want to... Bob Dylan had one song that politics is the final refuge for the rogues. But one should not be a rogue. One should be a pious person who has the interest of the citizens, and treat the citizens like their children, like their family. And then, of course, the those who produce all the necessities for society, they are like the Vaishyas. So the Kshatriyas are considered the, you know, the strong arms and shoulders. Brahmins the head, Vaishyas like the waist, and the workers in general are like the legs of the social body. All very important, just like we don't neglect any part of our body, but at the same time we do understand that, you know, if you cut your head off, the rest of the body is useless, or if the person is crazy, the rest of the body are very you know, it's out of control. So therefore, you know, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is particularly trying to train up a section of Brahmins, because that is not being done anywhere else. So, actually, you know, although the Varnashram is the ancient culture of India, actually, when Prabhupada was trying to start his movement to train up Brahmins, he couldn't get interest in India, and he couldn't get even practically one person who would say, yes, train my son or my daughter, you know, as a Brahmin or Brahmini, Nangu's interested. No, no, they will do technology, they will do this, they will do, you know, accounting, whatever like that. So, so Prithvi Maharaj, now he is a Kshatriya, or showing us how to be a Kshatriya, a ruler. And as we see here, and Prabhupada mentions that amongst the four orders, the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and the Sudras, the Kshatriyas, both the men and the women, they're generally very beautiful. They're very attractive features. And now, Srila Prabhupada, several times in his lectures, would quote that, see, in the Mahabharata, it describes that Parashuram, he was, when the Kshatriyas or the rulers become corrupted, he was annihilating them, literally generation after generation, very powerful, powered by the Lord. And eventually some of those Kshatriyas fled for their life and they went to Europe, you know, Greece, you know, then you know, some to Turkey, and then different places like that. And some of those, what we call Indo-European stock, as Prabhupada would call it, they ended up in places like America. So actually, Prabhupada would say that actually, you know, these features of that we see of the, you know, fair-complexioned Europeans, they have these very attractive features. Because they're actually descendants from the Kshatriyas of Vedic times who fled throughout Europe and ended up in America, Australia. So, in fact, you know, one time Jayananda, Prabhu, one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, he entered the room while Srila Prabhupada was doing a lecture. And Srila Prabhupada was saying, well, you remind me of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also had these qualities like that, very fair. And again, Prabhupada was mentioning that, you know, very, very auspicious qualities. You know, he said, yes, just like Lord Chaitanya, very tall, broad shoulders, fair complexion, very handsome, like this. So these Kshatriyas, the men and the women, they have those qualities. So Prithvi Maharaj was also like that. Now, here, the point to be understood, of course, is that the features that we get in our particular body, those features are according to our pious or impious activities in previous lives. So, if we have become very pious, we get generally, there are, for instance, in human society at least, if one is very pious and they get very good bodily features, very attractive, here you see his nose, you know, his describes his nice teeth. His nose is like straight, you know, not flattened, not too broad. Nice, you know, nice nose, nice features. And so these good body, that is one result of piety. Also, one can take an aristocratic birth. Prabhupada, when he describes aristocratic birth, he describes it like this, that if you take a really high birth, then just to get to meet that person, you have to book for 3 or 4 months. You know, and still you may not get to see them. You know. Ordinary people, you can just, you know, barge in whenever you like. But aristocracy, they can very hard to, you know, It is a high family. Now previously, Prabhupada also mentioned that previously that aristocratic birth meant one was pious. You know, they had good qualities. These days, aristocratic birth means you've got lots of money. You can be the biggest rogue. Very animalistic. Very sinful. Horrible person. But if you have lots of money, you are considered aristocracy. That's it. But previously, aristocracy was not like that. It was considered very good quality, very well cultured, like that. And so, good birth and nice form, rupa, well educated. You know, that opportunity to gain a good education, to be knowledgeable, and wealth, of course. Wealth is. So, if one is impious, then of course one goes down into the animal species. And so Prabhupada mentions here that he says the bodily features of a particular person are exhibited in accordance with his past deeds, for according to one's past deeds, his next bodily features, whether in human society, animal society, or demigod society, are determined. So now Srila Prabhupada discussing this point, he says this is actually proof of the transmigration of the soul. So for instance, you know, sometimes the young children, younger than these ones, you know, little children, sometimes 3 and 4, come and sit in the class, and you can see that because of the particular body they're in, a childhood body, their consciousness is entrapped. Their consciousness is somewhat entrapped by that body. So it only develops to a certain degree because of the body, the child body. So you see little children, sometimes they like to put on, you know, the young little boys will put on the father's shoes and the father's hat. And I used to do that as a child. My mother said, you know, you put a hat in his head, sit him in a cardboard box, he'd just sit there all day. But, you know, you feel comfortable. I'm just like my, you know, like the adults. Or, you know, the young girls, I might put the mother's shoes on, you know, what have you. I won't say an apron, I might take that the wrong way. Because men also wear aprons these days. So, but that same child, when they become an adult, their consciousness is more developed because they have a different body, although they're the same person. Okay. So, that same person has transmigrated from one body to another many times. And as they do, as we do, then our consciousness, which is somewhat, you know, just like wood. You know, fire is there within wood. If you have a small quantity of wood, you know, it will, you know, a certain fire will come. If you have a bigger quantity of wood, just recently we had big fires, you burn the whole forest, then the fire can go, you know, 30, 40, 50 feet in the air, like that. Like a big fiery monster. But, you know, a little bit of wood, you can't get that sort of fire. So the body confines the consciousness. That is proof of transmigration. That it's the same person, yet, from body to body, as we go from body to body, in this you know, boyhood or girlhood to youth to old age, in this life, we see that when we change this body, we will go into another body at the time of death, and that body will be the result of our impious activities or pious activities, a mixture of both, in which case we can actually go down into the animal species of life, of which there are 8,400,000 different species of life. those 8,400,000 species of life, among them you get the humans, and of which amongst them there are 400,000 different species of humans. And even in the human form of life, some of them, because of some impiety or a lot of impiety, you know, it's a less fortunate birth. You know, poverty, very ugly features, very ill body, and no opportunity for education. Even the opportunity is there, the ability to take advantage of it is not there, and a birth, not in a family where there's any influence or opportunity. So take birth in a family where people literally can do as they please with your family, with you, if you just sometimes treat you even like an animal. So not a very powerful aristocratic family. So this is the result. And then in human life you can take birth as the consciousness develops, and one becomes because in the beginning of human life the Vedas describe that actually the human form of life is also considered an animal. It's called jantu. Jantu means animal. A human, so we may be very proud. We are counted, according to the Vedas, as animals. But if our activities become, we're considered a rational animal. But if we don't use our rationality, then we're just animals. But rational means we begin to try and separate ourselves of what the animals are doing, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. What is above that? You know, we have this rationality. We have this ability to, question. A dog thinks they're a dog. Am I this body, or because I appear to be transmigrating from one body to another, even in this life, at the time of death I will remain the same? What is my destination? I appear to be an unchanging living entity. So what is my nature? So amongst the civilized human beings, especially those who follow the Varnashram. So actually the ancient culture of India is Varnashram. The word Hindu does not exist in any of the ancient scriptures or writings or histories of India. Actually the word Hindu, so people today in India, they follow Hinduism. And by following Hindu, they are saying that we're following the ancient culture of India. But there is no ancient Hindu culture in India. That's the problem. Actually, Hinduism just didn't exist. So to follow the ancient culture of India, one follows the Aryan culture. There's no Hindu Aryans. The Aryans, they had a God-centered or a spiritually-centered life, and they followed the Varnashram, Devi Varnashram, God-centered, dividing the social body into the four natural divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and the spiritual orders into Brahmachari, Grihastha for family life, Vanapras, living with the wife, beginning to retire from material activities, and doing more spiritual activities, and then Sannyas,
taken to the renounced order of life. So that is actually the civilized. And if one follows that Varnashram, then gradually, by performing one's activities, even as a Sudra, a Vaishya, whatever, if one follows the Varnashram, they will be elevated from the consciousness being strongly contaminated by tamaguna, which is sort of closer to the animal life in ignorance, and gradually a little bit more human, rajas, and then gradually starting to perceive one's spiritual nature, coming to sattva, where one can perceive, yes, I am Brahman, I am not this body, and seeing all living entities. Every living entity is not that body. Every living entity, whether it be an elephant, a dog, a dog eater, a Brahmana, Shudra, there's a spirit soul within them. So these, now, if one becomes very, very elevated, and then in through the Varnashram, and comes to understand that there is, we are soul, and then they may try to understand, so what is God? Now at that point, if one is, or, you know, a very unusual crossroad there, because at this point, you know, one is achieving the results of so much piety, there's beauty, wealth, there's knowledge, there's fame, so many things. And according to Prahlad Maharaj, these are all impediments on the spiritual path. Because if one tries to understand spiritual subject matters by one's material qualifications, then they become an impediment. And if one becomes proud of one's material pious position. So, just like Srila Prabhupada gives this example, that, you know, people look at the Hare Krishnas and they consider, oh, you know, because they're unfortunate, they have to chant Hare Krishna because there's not much else for them. And, actually, the first time I saw a couple of Hare Krishna ladies walking down the street, and this is going back 1978, could have been earlier, 1977, but I saw them and I looked at them and I thought, you know, the poor girls have probably just got nothing else. So they, you know, they've taken to, that was my thought, you know. So I was a young lad, you know, just travelling around in Australia like a hippie, enjoying myself, thinking I was. And so, you know, that was my thought. And you know, people used to, I know when we used to preach, people looked at us like that. I know one time, but we weren't in that position. I remember one time doing Sankirtan. I was going down one street, and I was selling paintings, you know, as we say, liberating Lakshmi. The money is in the hands of demoniac people using it for intoxication, meat eating, prostitution, gambling, you know, all the unmentionable. But we want to, you know, get that money back and, you know, do some benefit for the world under the guidance of Krishna. So, you know, this money is considered, you know, the opulence, the blessings of Lakshmi, the spiritual energy of the Lord. And so anyway, as I was going down the street, practically every second place I went to, I sold a painting. And then, you know, the boss would see me walking out with all this money. And then I'd walk into the next one, and that boss, and they were watching me. It was like two-story buildings. In that one street, three bosses come down and said, I'll give you a job right now. I'll employ you. You come and work for me, I'll give you a job right now. Then when they actually see what the Hare Krishnas are doing, they think, you know, they're not like these poor, unfortunate people with, you know, no hope in life. They're actually, because, you know, one of the opulences that we see that Prithi Maharaj has, a very pious person, not only are they wealthy, you know, beautiful, etc., but they're also renounced. It's very important that that renunciation is there, because that makes the opulences that one has properly utilized. One doesn't become overly proud. So, but people think like that. They become very proud. You know, what need do I have of God? You know, these poor people, they're praying for bread. I have so much money. I own the bread factory. You know, they're praying for bread on a daily basis. I own the bread. Why do I need God? So, but this is very dangerous, very risky. So at that point, if one hasn't taken advantage of the... Because there's the Varna Ashram. It's the ashrams, or cultivating that spirituality, that I'm not this body, there's a whole higher goal, there's a God conscious, you know, the goal of life is to become, please, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If they don't develop that detachment, that whatever duty you're performing, whether it be as a Sudra, a Vaishya, a Kshatriya, or a Brahmana, you should do it with detachment. You should do it that I'm doing this duty as a Sudra, and I know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be pleased. I'm doing this under the direction of the Brahmanas, and I know it is for the benefit of the whole society, the spiritually sensitive society, and I know, so I'm doing it like that. And, you know, I have to curb my greed and what have you like that. And all the orders, they're doing like that. They're developing this sense of God consciousness, God in the center, even though they may not have a full understanding, but they're understanding, you know, they're following those who, and they see that everyone is happy, everyone is benefiting like this. So that detachment. So if the Varna Ashram, it's not a caste system. Devi Varna Ashram means there is a spirituality at the heart. In the Hindu system, there's nothing like Varna Ashram, they have a caste system. You know, you're born in a certain position, you're of that position, and there's not even spiritual training. In fact, you know, in the Hindu system today, the leaders, you know, they'll say that, you know, too much religion is holding back our economic development. It's holding back our economy, holding back our technological advancement and so many different things. So, if that opulence, that good birth, the result of all one's piety, is coupled with spirituality, Prabhupada says, then that's like gold with fragrance. They generally, you know, well, generally, I mean, you can't, I don't think, has anyone ever found some gold? No, you can't find it in this material world, Prabhupada says. You can't find, but in the spiritual world, Chintamani, it is touchstone, but not only touchstone, or there have been some samples of touchstone in this world. Sanatana Goswami had a touchstone. If you touch iron to this touchstone, you get it, the iron turns into gold. That in the spiritual world, all the ground, all the buildings, everything is made from touchstone, which means all your desires are fulfilled. So you know the residences where people live is touchstone. So not only can it be, you know, of any beautiful variety, but also with fragrance. and everything is conscious. So, then, of course, you know, if one becomes proud, then all the benefit where one is on the verge where they can enter into spiritual understanding, that can be lost by becoming proud of one's material qualifications. And we see this with Indra. Well, there's many, many examples. I'm not having a go at Indra. But, you know, it is a classic example. You see, in the 8th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, over the course of a couple of manus, this war broke out between the demons and the demigods. And in the beginning, although it was very unusual, the demons, when they had a battle with the demigods, they actually started winning, and the demigods, they understood this is due to the curse that Indra received. That Indra, he was one day he was on very proudly going along the road in the heavenly planets on his powerful elephant. And his spiritual master came walking past, Dravasa Muni, one of his spiritual masters, one of his spiritual gods. And Dravasa Muni offered him a garland, bestowing some mercy. So Indra, you know, being very proud, he, you know, didn't offer due respect. He took that garland, he just threw it on the head of the elephant. Because the elephant just didn't care even less, and he just threw it on the ground and trampled on it. But Dravasa Muni thought, you know, here as a result of your pious activities, you've attained the post of Indra. So much knowledge, so much power, so much opulence, everything, so much beauty. And the result is you become proud. So then he cursed him. And because of that, the whole heavenly system fell into disarray, and everyone began suffering like that. Because actually, when we attain through the Varnashram system, you know, the results of pious activities, it's because we're guided by the brahmanas and the saintly persons. And, you know, they're blessings, and gradually we elevate that. But then if we offend those same personalities, and this is the result of becoming proud of one's, you know, knowledge, one's, you know, abilities. You know, sometimes one may be very good at, you know, singing or music or poetry or writing or dancing, or, you know, one may be very attractive, one may be very wealthy, maybe coming from a good family, you know, very intelligent, you know, very good memory, quote so many, you know, verses from scripture, so many different things, it becomes proud. But at that point, one may become disrespectful of very, very, you know, very great personalities. Yeah. And then, of course, from there, one can, you know, even at one stage, you know, Indra took birth as a pig. You know, he felt so, you know, that's, that one can descend back down. It says that every living entity, when they come into the material world, their first birth is Brahma. From there, we descend to the, you know, different species of life. So, therefore, in spiritual life, in order to understand, I'm not this body, I'm eternal. If I'm not this body and I'm eternal, I'm changing bodies according to my karma, but the scriptures, such as the Bhagavad Gita, describes that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's also eternal, but he has no karma. He doesn't have a material body. He takes birth, you know, as he pleases, according to his pastimes or to rectify religious principles, but he's not like us. So he is spiritual like us. We have that same quality, but he has unlimited spiritual qualities in quantity. So if one wants to understand the personality of Godhead, as it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, if one understands Krishna, one will not take birth again in this world. But that is very, very difficult. Over, you know, many, many lifetimes, millions and millions of lifetimes, to come to the point where one may even endeavor to get out of the cycle of birth and death, to fully understand, you know, one's position. If I'm a spirit soul, you know, what is my activities as a spirit soul? What is my destination as a spirit soul? And amongst thousands and thousands, so, you know, one in millions after many, many births tries to attain that perfection. And amongst one of those who may achieve that perfection, you know, hardly any of those can understand Krishna. Very, very rare. So advancing in spiritual life is very, very difficult. But as Prahlad Maharaj says, he says, you know, how is it, you know, when Lord Narasimhadev had, you know, killed Hiranyakashipu, and then all the demigods from all over the different planetary systems came there after that wonderful feat, and they tried to pacify and please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and his eternal form as Narasimha. But they could not please the Lord. They could not satisfy him with any of their material. So Prahlad, he asked, how is it that these personalities with all these great material qualifications to the highest limit possible in this material world, that they can, so how can I? And then he says, so then it must be bhakti, by bhakti, that the Lord, how is the Lord satisfied with me? You know, because there's a little bit of bhakti. And that is it. There's no material qualification, but the Lord is pleased by bhakti. So that quality of bhakti, it begins from that point. If we see in the Bhagavad Gita, we understand that we have, in any activity we perform in this world, including changing into our next body, we have a little bit of control, but very little. But actually, in full control is the personality of Godhead. That under the very stringent, strict rules of the material energy, if we associate with particular modes of material nature and perform impious activities, we will take the body and this different lower species of life. If we become very inimical to the, you know, religious principles and the personality of Godhead, we are cast into different demoniac species of life. We have no control over that. Even great saintly persons, you know, if they live in like a temple environment or a holy dharma, and they offend because they become proud, and if they become offensive to Krishna or to saintly persons, they may be thinking, oh, I will take liberation, but they will take birth as a monkey, a turtle, some of the birds. I sometimes wonder, you know, who some of the birds that I see come here to this temple. I've seen, there's a couple of, one or two that come every now and then. They get down in this fountain here and they bathe, but not like an ordinary bird, you know, an ordinary bird will come and they splash and then off they go. You know, they prune themselves a little. There's a couple of them and they just spend hours. Seriously, I don't know if you've ever seen them. They get there, they're just enjoying the water and enjoying the atmosphere, you know, and then they cleanse every part, they lie on their back, little feet up in the air, you know, under the wings. And they're like that for how, I've seen them, you know. There's something, you know, there's something special, you know, they really like to, they're like Brahmana birds, you know. There's something, you know, but still, you know, why are they birds? So, we have very little control. So we understand, I'm a tiny little spirit soul. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us this. We're like a little speck of dust. I'm a spirit soul, tiny, tiny, tiny little spiritual spark. And so small that if I really misbehave, I can be put into the body of the tiniest little, you know, germ-like creature that you have to look into a microscope and say, oh, where's Ganga gone? Oh, there he is amongst... You know, so small, so tiny. And, so we become very proud of our, you know, body. Prabhupada says, you know, we think in one sense we're like giants compared to the ants and what have you. Become very proud, you know, and we exploit the animals and squish them and so many. But actually we're just tiny, tiny. If we understand that and become very humble and surrender to Krishna and take shelter of the saintly personalities such as Srila Prabhupada who've, and the scriptures, not taking shelter of our imagination or material intelligence, then actually very easily, then actually understanding the spiritual world becomes very easy. You know, you listen to some of Srila Prabhupada's lectures in 19, going back to the early 60s, you know, 1968. Prabhupada was, you know, he'd be giving class, he'd be talking, speaking from the Brahma Samhita. And he'd be telling, you know, these people, most, some of them have been around for maybe a year, some 6 months, some 2 days. And he's explaining to them, you know, about the spiritual world. But because... You know, in Prabhupada's presence, they're just very humble and submissive, and they want to hear without challenging. They're immediately understanding. And Prabhupada is describing that, you know, just like in the spiritual world, that, you know, there's the Chintamani touchstone, but there is also the desire trees. So that's very difficult for us to understand, you know, a desire tree, it can fulfill everyone's desires. But Srila Prabhupada explains that, he says that, you know, if I ask anyone here, oh, can you please get me a drink of water, or someone already has, then I can understand, very good. If I ask anyone here, oh, I've had enough water, can you get me some hot milk? You probably could. Prabhupada says, why? Because you're a spirit, with developed consciousness. If I have particular desires, you know, I'll have milk, then I'll have a lassi, a little twist of lemon. You can do that. He says, but say if you take a rose bush, you get a rose, and if you ask them, look, a little bit of lavender, making a garland and a couple of marigolds, otherwise I have to, you know, go to the market. No, they cannot, because although there's a spirit soul there, they're not developed. So as the spirit soul develops through the different species of life and comes to the human form of life, you know, a human can fulfill so many different, you know, desires because they're advanced spiritual consciousness. And in the spiritual world, it's like that even the desire trees, because they're advanced in spiritual consciousness, they can actually fulfill all desires. And so he describes that the... all the residents of the spiritual world, they're Nanda Chinmaya Rasa. They have that same quality as Krishna because they're expansions of Krishna. They're all fully developed. And fully developed means that, you know, when we are fully spiritually awake, then... just like he gives the example that, you know, if you take the rose flower, it begins as a little bud, a couple of little leaves, and gradually goes, you know, different stages, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then it becomes a fully bloomed fragrant rose. So he describes that the living entity, as we go through the different species, but when we come to our full Krishna consciousness, we like the full bloomed rose like that. And so that is the nature of the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world, everyone, they are fully conscious. There's no impiety. Everyone is God conscious. Everyone is very blissful. Just like they can fully reciprocate. They're so advanced in consciousness that they can fully reciprocate with the personality of Godhead in a loving exchange. Here we're discussing the beauty of Prithvi Maharaj, and sometimes you hear the beauty of the residents of the heavenly planets, but Prabhupada is saying that in the spiritual world, the beauty of the living entities there is thousands and thousands of times beyond what we can even imagine. So beautiful. He says, but although they're so beautiful, the men, every woman, Sahasra, Lakshmi, every woman is a goddess of fortune in the spiritual world. Prabhupada says, every woman is a goddess of fortune. So beautiful, so qualified, so enchanting, like that. And he says, but although the men are so beautiful, the women are so beautiful, he says there's no sex life. He says there's kissing, there's hugging, there's embracing, everything is there, but because they're all filled with pure love for each other and the personality of Godhead, they just don't. They're enjoying so much happiness that they don't have sex life. That's not something that they think is happening. That just doesn't come into their consciousness. Actually, from the beginning to the end, all their activities, they're immersed in Krishna Kirtan. Immersed in Krishna Kirtan. So, just like. The cowherd boys, they will go out and play with Krishna, and then they'll enjoy his pastimes, and then they'll come home and they tell Mother Yasoda and the different ladies, "Oh, today, this big demon come, he was going to, devour us, and then Krishna just killed him so easy, and it's just like this." And the mothers, they'll say, "Oh, yes, Krishna, very wonderful, very wonderful." They don't care that he's got. They don't care that he's got, whatever happens, they just think, oh, let's see Krishna. Krishna will, So, great torrents of rain by Indra, he's trying to kill everyone. What will Krishna do? And then Krishna holds up the Govardhan Hill. They don't care that he's got, they just, here's an opportunity, we can just stand under this Govardhan Hill and just see Krishna without moving for 7 days, fulfilling. And when Krishna goes out into the forest and the gopis, all day they're thinking, well, Krishna must be doing this and Krishna must be saying this. And then Krishna comes home at the end of the day. All the animals, the calves, are always thinking of Krishna. They have a personal relationship with Krishna, each and every one of them. Krishna will call each one of them. There's unlimited cows and calves. And Krishna will call each and every one of them by name. And when Krishna calls them, the cows will come running, and they're so happy to see Krishna that the milk starts flowing from the milk bag. They're so happy. So they're reciprocating with Krishna. Krishna's reciprocating with them. So this is the full perfection that is possible for us. To actually, when we leave this body, Prabhupada says, if you want, as you surrender, Krishna will reward you. If you want to go back to the spiritual world, if you have that desire, then Krishna will fulfill that desire. And you can have a spiritual body. You can be like one of the cowherd boys, you can be like one of the gopis, you can be like one of the calves. If you have that desire, then by Krishna consciousness, the consciousness will develop to that, you get the suitable body. Or, your desire to satisfy the greed and the anger and the lust and the pride in this world, then you take a suitable form in this world to satisfy that. And of course, this is what this verse is about. And of this, you know, we should see the proof there before our eyes every day. I am a spirit soul. I am different from this body. And I am transmigrating. It is happening. I see it happening every day. And I have no doubt that when I leave this body, it's not the end. But I can also see that these material bodies are restricting my consciousness. But in the human form of life, the best opportunity is there even to revive our original spiritual consciousness. Why not take that and exist in the spiritual realm after leaving this body, as demonstrated by Krishna? That's why Krishna came to show his pastimes, because he wanted to attract us back to the spiritual world. He said, I'll show you. Don't rot in this material world. Look what I'm doing. This is what we do in the spiritual world. Come back to the spiritual world. So this is a little bit of what we can understand from this nice verse in purport by Srila Prabhupada. So any questions or comments at the end of that? I guess.
Can you do this question regarding bhakti and surrender? You can't do just bhakti and you just can't do surrender. Like, what I'm thinking. But you need to do bhakti and surrender both, right? Can there be only just surrender and no bhakti? Or there can be only just bhakti but people are not surrendering?
Well, see, when Krishna says surrender, the verse before that, he says, always think of me. That's smaran. So there are nine processes of devotional service. Always thinking of Krishna, that is smaran. He says, always think of me, become my devotee. Don't just think of me, but think of me with love as a bhakta or a bhaktin. Don't be envious of me. Worship me, it's like we're worshiping Krishna in the temple. That is also bhakti. Offer your obeisances unto me. And he describes these principal activities. So he says, he's saying, this is the most confidential message of the Gita, is perform these activities of bhakti. Then he says, do as I say, surrender to that. Yeah. If the teacher says, you write, 100 times the alphabet, so you learn. No, I'm not going to. I'd rather go back. You must. All right, I will. That's surrender. What are you surrendering to? The instruction that I must write somewhere. So what are you surrendering? When Krishna says surrender, what are you surrendering to? His instruction that you do bhakti. He's not saying surrender and become an Astanga yogi. This is my instruction. He's not saying become a gyan. He's actually derided. He's not saying worship the demigods. He's saying give up all these other processes and just do the bhakti that I've asked you to do. That's surrender. If we do it, that's surrender. So surrender, whenever we surrender, it means that we follow the will of that person. It's not like we wave a white flag and we just go off and do whatever we like. Surrender means we are now under that person's, we are voluntarily. And as Krishna says, think of me, worship me, but become my devotee. He says, you voluntarily love me and follow the processes by which that love develops. And that is called surrender. So ultimately, Krishna is saying, when he says surrender, he's saying, my instruction is, revive your love for me. And, and Krishna, he is always loving us. But you know, Krishna, you know, he is in one sense fully surrendered to our love, because even though we come to this you know, material world, he accompanies us. He never forgets us. He accompanies us as a super soul. He gives us the Bhagavad Gita. He sends the spiritual master. So his love is unconditional. We commit sinful activities and impious activities, you know, and end up in all different punishments, is different species of life. But his love is unconditional. He never ever forgets us, and he will keep accompanying us life after life, until gradually one day we turn to him and we see, oh, he's always been there loving us. Just like, you know, the sunshine is always there, and you know, we can take advantage of it or not. You know, when Krishna is saying surrender, it's not like, oh, he's withholding something, and when I surrender, then he'll give. It's like saying the sunshine is withholding his sunshine, you know, there's no sunshine for me. No, if we're like the owl, yes, then we close our eyes. Oh, there's no sunshine like that. So we're like the owl. But the sunshine is always there. It's unconditional for everyone. There's no qualification. You don't need any qualification to walk out in the sunshine. You just want it. Okay? So we take surrender as something, you know, very big and demanding, but you know, like we said, you know, you want sunshine? Surrender. Go outside. You know, it sounds like something big, you know, but really it comes down to our intelligence and free will. But, you know, it sounds like Krishna's asking something really big. Or, you know, how can we love God? Or we must surrender. Oh, gee, okay, there's a barrier there. And, you know, how do I get the sunshine? Well, someone said you have to go outside. Oh, I'm not following anyone else's instruction. There's a barrier there. Well, you just walk if you want it. You walk in. Anyone wants to go back to the spiritual world? Krishna is invited. And he personally comes. He demonstrates all the spiritual pastimes. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.